From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Benicia.
Sunset District.
I live in Lakeside.
In the Western Addition.
Diamond Heights.
Emeryville, California.
Coming up, we're taking an audio tour of one Oakland neighborhood, Chinatown.
I think everyone thinks I'm crazy to be working here. Most people my age would be rather traveling or hanging out with other old people.
That story and reports from a constantly changing place.
Oakland Chinatown is simply the human form of Mount St. Helens in the sense that it just keeps coming back to life.
Also, what should the city do with the three-block area around BART that's slated for redevelopment?
The community still needs services for seniors, services for young people. Open space.
It's a special series produced with Mills College in Oakland, today on Cross Currents. Welcome to a special edition of Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan.
We went to Chinatown and we knocked on all the doors and we went out and got 1,000 signatures. In several days.
Sometimes I think I'm the only adult that ever listens to them or that they can communicate with.
And I was there by myself with my partner, two people, gang unit for the whole city of Oakland, and we were busy.
In this series, co-produced with Mills College in Oakland, we're exploring the history of Oakland's Chinatown. Over the past 2 days, we heard stories from the neighborhood before and during World War II.
It was the most beautiful home on the block. And it was like you're entering into a wealthy home in China.
We'd go around and we would actually, like the Pied Piper, collect our Sunday school students.
We peeled prawns, we wrapped wontons, we did all the stuff that kids would do as part of a restaurant family, a working family in Chinatown.
After World War II, the neighborhood would suffer economic decline as many residents left Chinatown for the suburbs and city leaders tried to remake downtown.
I mean, their most absurd plan was to tear down the entire downtown and rebuild it from scratch. I mean, you can't imagine the foolishness of this.
That's UC Berkeley professor Richard Walker, who points out that in 1950s America, the car was king.
In this century, America has become a nation on wheels. We ride on wheels to work, to shop, to play, to go about any place we want to go. We depend on wheels to bring us the food we eat, the clothes we wear, the things we use. But when we depend on wheels, we depend also on highways and roads and streets for the wheels to roll on. And therein lies the challenge, building highways and roads and streets fast enough to keep up with the need.
Along with the new development, the 1960s would also give rise to a new generation of Chinatown activists, self-described young people who didn't know how hard what they were trying to do would be.
We had a little office here, and when it rained, the roof leaked, and we had to mop up, and there were broken windows that the pigeons would fly in and out of, and sometimes we'd have to go clean pigeon poop.
Lynette Lee was like many Chinatown teens who went away to college and came back to transform the neighborhood. These young people created a network of social services and affordable housing for seniors. But residents still had to contend with traffic. The freeways and thoroughfares that cut through the neighborhood would lead to a tragic death, which would in turn spur Chinatown residents to action. Reporter Melody Sage has that story.
The corner of 9th and Webster is one of the busiest intersections in Oakland's Chinatown. It's only 3 o'clock, but there's already a traffic jam. Shoppers are walking around, ducking into markets and dim sum shops. Halfway down the block is Cam Hung Restaurant. Behind the counter, Patrick Quach is busy taking orders for Vietnamese sandwiches.
Barbecue pork and then a vegetarian one.
There's just a lot of people that come in and out of Oakland Chinatown. I mean, cars, people. It's fairly busy around here.
Patrick Quach says he's been working here since he could pick up a potato peeler. His grandmother opened the store in the 80s.
1983, so when I was one, they had the store.
Beyond the shop's plate glass windows, four lanes of traffic grind by. Webster Street is a major thoroughfare in downtown Oakland that ushers traffic from the city's business district to the 880 freeway and the very busy Alameda Posey Tube. Although it's crowded today, Quatch says a few years ago it was a lot worse.
The vehicles weren't able to merge due to pedestrians crossing the street. A couple people got hit by cars and things like that.
Actually, it was more than a couple people. Between 1998 and 2002, there were a total of 50 reported pedestrian vehicle collisions. 38 resulted in injury. One was fatal.
He was walking across the street right there on 8th and Webster, and one driver became impatient and took off while my dad was still in the crosswalk and killed him.
Alan Yee lost his 89-year-old father in 2001. The accident shook the community.
It's just that Chinatown has, children and a lot of elderly, and therefore, and people walk because it's a community.
It's a community that mobilized after the death of Yee's father. Two organizations, the Oakland Chinatown Chamber of Commerce and Asian Health Services, decided it was time to revitalize the neighborhood's streetscape. So they created the Revive Chinatown Committee. Jenny Ong is head of the chamber. She says safety was the committee's number one priority, but Chinatown's image and atmosphere were important too.
It was not attractive. It was not welcoming to Chinatown. I think the fact that there's so many cars going whizzing right down on Webster Street here.
Ong takes me to the corner of 9th and Webster to describe what the streets were like before.
When you're at an intersection, there's either a right turn or a left turn. And so it seems like traffic is coming in all directions. And that really made it unsafe for a lot of the pedestrians here, especially the seniors.
The coalition highlighted these issues to the city. Ong says a study showed Chinatown had the worst traffic conditions in Oakland. With the help of city officials, the Revive Chinatown Coalition applied for state grants to revamp the neighborhood. After years of hard work, Ong is showing me the results, like improved street lighting.
It makes Chinatown a much brighter place and safer place.
And Ong points out another change, the bright red and yellow Qing Dynasty-themed crosswalks that allow pedestrians to cross diagonally.
It's called a scramble now, and that keeps the vehicles away from the pedestrians.
A scramble-style crosswalk allows pedestrians to cross all at once while traffic waits in every direction. Either cars are moving or foot traffic, but never both at the same time. Ong says this has made a significant difference in pedestrian safety. And it's improved Chinatown's attractiveness. That's important to business owners, Ong says, who felt Chinatown's congestion was making it hard to compete with new Asian malls popping up in Bay Area suburbs. Back at Cam Hung, the sandwich shop, I ask Patrick Quatch whether he thinks the project has succeeded in giving a boost to neighborhood businesses.
It all depends on who you're attracting. If you are attracting the young guy who's trying to go to a mall, no. If you're attracting some a little older people who are trying to buy food, yes. If you are anybody who likes Vietnamese sandwiches, yes.
To get a second opinion about the effects of Revive Chinatown on business, I talked to Kim Wong, the manager of New Oakland Pharmacy. The store is around the corner from Cam Hung on 8th Street. Wong says although the project improved safety, he hasn't seen an increase in customers. He thinks the city should invest more in the neighborhood.
I mean, we're multicultural. I mean, all kind of ethnic groups come down here. They shop and go eat. And you know, you have to cherish those little treasures that you have in the city. I mean, Oakland Chinatown has been a major moneymaker in taxes for a long time, and I think it's about time that they, you know, consider us and, you know, help redevelop this area.
That's also a goal for Revive Chinatown. The city is currently planning to redevelop three blocks of the neighborhood centered around Madison Square Park, just a few blocks from where we're standing in the heart of Chinatown. In the early 20th century, that area was a vibrant part of Chinatown. And Jenny Ong says she hopes the new redevelopment project will make it that way once again. In Oakland, I'm Melody Sage for Cross Currents.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from KLW News. It's produced in association with Mills College in Oakland. And we've been exploring the history of one Oakland neighborhood, which is Chinatown. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm joined by journalist and author William Wong and Serena Chen, who was a writer for East West News and also hosted Asians Now on Channel 2. And we've entered the contemporary period in Oakland's Chinatown, but it's very much informed by the past. One of the things that I was thinking as I was listening to that piece is that the freeways and the Posey Tube and the fact that Webster now is this big thoroughfare of traffic really cut off this neighborhood. And yet, when I look at Oakland in particular and neighborhoods all over the Bay Area and the country, Oakland is a very uniquely pedestrian neighborhood. So I'm listening to this story and it just feels like here's this kind of example of the new urbanism almost, right? People who are living, working, walking, and yet it's so informed by the way we've done development in the past that it's so unsafe for neighbors.
Well, Oakland's Chinatown redevelopment history, especially with the Nimitz Freeway cutting through it and then the BART project and headquarters where it is, a little bit of the Oakland Museum, Laney College, and the transportation MTC, the Metropolitan Transportation.
And how you get to Alameda is through.
And the Posey Tube all tells me that it's kind of a familiar tale of powerless ethnic communities getting exploited by some greater public good without any real consideration for the impact on that ethnic community.
Or that was at least certainly the history prior to, you know, to today. I mean, it seems to me that this community has really come together to get political power and to change the way that those kinds of policies happen.
But it's interesting the point you make about Chinatown also being an example of close-in living given the environmental impacts and the fact that people would like to get back to a community that also has work. I never thought of it that way, but it is truly that way. And we're going to be talking in a minute about the redevelopment ideas that have come up, but it's a
which was mentioned
point.
In that piece. We're also joined. That's William Wong, and we're joined also by Serena Chen. What were your thoughts when you're listening to this movement of Revive Chinatown and kind of the juxtaposition of what's happening right now, but how limiting or limited the neighborhood is in some ways because of the way that the freeways have cut through it?
It's interesting in how resilient the Chinatown community has been, because in the 40-odd years that I've lived in Oakland, I've been observing it all the while. And in every single recession that I've seen where storefronts in the rest of Oakland are being boarded up, Oakland Chinatown was still vibrant, still happening because people live there, people shop there, people eat there, people go to church there.
But do you think, Serena, that it's also because there's constant influx of new immigrants?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Had it not been for the 1965 revamping of the immigration law, we'd be dead. And then the 1975 Vietnam, the fall of Vietnam, of Saigon, basically all these immigrants started coming in and setting up a shop again. I used to go and visit Mount St. Helens every year as it was revitalizing. And Oakland Chinatown is simply the human form of Mount St. Helens, in the sense that despite everything, despite all predictions, it just keeps coming back to life, mm-hmm. because the people are here and they keep coming in and the seeds keep getting planted. And the newly retired head of the Healthcare Services Agency in Alameda County, his eyes took a dreamy look in them and he said, "Serena, I just can't tell you how different people are in Oakland Chinatown now that those crosswalks are set in." Mm-hmm. It has built a sense of community.
And just through a crosswalk, isn't that interesting?
Well, what happened is that a lot of people volunteered at those four corners and informed people for the first several weeks of that new crosswalk. And just now, when I go to Chinatown and someone tries to cross when it's not their turn, a complete stranger will stop them and say, don't do that, because everyone sees the value of it. Mm-hmm. And if you had told me this 30 years ago that Chinese people would follow rules, I would not believe it. So I'm just really impressed that when people see it's a common good, that they will do
it. And
it
also physically changed the look of the neighborhood.
It does.
It's beautiful. Well, Bill
Wong. There's an inside Chinatown lesson to be learned from this Revive Chinatown movement as well. The two groups that led it, the Oakland Chinatown Chamber of Commerce and the Asian Health Services, represent sort of two sides of a quasi-political, ideological war that's been historic in contemporary Chinatown life. In other words, the Chinatown Chamber represents business and merchant interests. The Asian Health Services really are a social service, more liberal, progressive organization. It is a little unusual in Oakland Chinatown history for those two interest groups to work as closely together, but they saw a common interest, they got together, and they did it. On other issues, they are on opposite sides, if you will. And so I think that really is an interesting lesson for an inside Chinatown look of what goes on in the dynamics of that community.
Yeah, and you know, as we've been exploring this series through the decades of history, one of the themes that keeps jumping out to me as somebody who came to this project as an outsider is this sense of taking something like a tragedy, the death of Alan Yee's father, and turning it into a sort of pioneering social commercial experiment. I mean, that I see that over and over, the story of Harry Hu and community policing, the story of Asian Health Services, the story of the Asian Resource Center, the story of changing how the redevelopment agency was working with community. I mean, that that has struck me as a theme throughout this series.
Well, you look at the Lions Building, Ibaltzi. Basically, when Lynette first said, we're going to have commercial stores on the first level and nonprofits on the second and third level, all of us laughed at her because it was unheard of. Like, it's you're either one or the other. You're either a breath mint or a candy mint. But basically, they took a social justice idea and merged it with what are the strongest elements of our culture of entrepreneurship and building community and mixed use. And now I see all over the United States, I see books written about mixed use, affordable housing development. And Lynette Zhengli has been a pioneer in that.
Our next story really has to do with this influx of constant immigrants to the neighborhood. And in, you know, the heart of high-tech California, where our next story is really about a low-tech Craigslist on a store wall in the center of Chinatown. Let's hear from Lindsay Lee.
I'm standing in Oakland's Chinatown with Anne Huang.
I'm the former executive director of Oakland Asian Cultural Center.
And Roy Chan.
I'm the co-director of the Oakland Asian Cultural Center.
And we are...
We're at the corner of 8th and Webster, and this is sort of like the epicenter of Chinatown.
We're standing in front of a bakery called Delicious Foods. It smells really delicious, but we're actually looking at the outside wall of the bakery.
We're in front of this community board. And it's these two bulletin boards.
The boards are covered with dozens of handmade flyers stuck on with tape.
It's what we've kind of labeled a Chinatown Craigslist.
Yeah, a very low-tech Craigslist.
It's a board that has postings of spaces for rent.
Job opportunities, cars for sale.
There's one posting for learn how to shoot.
A parking spot for rent catches Chan's eye.
$5 a day? I might buy that.
Without Chan and Huang, I'd be lost. Apart from one or two English flyers, these postings are mostly in Chinese.
单房出租, that means one room available. 屋轮华富, that means Oakland Chinatown. And looks like a popular flyer. All the little tags are gone.
This board on the bakery wall provides a vital community service, especially for new immigrants. Roy Chan says those with limited English skills or without internet access can use the Chinatown Craigslist as a way to connect with others for goods and services.
This is a really neat board because it sort of reflects sort of this exchange of information and resources in a way that's just very, very immediate and quick and very kind of tangible.
It started when the store owners saw flyers covering the light poles in Chinatown, including the ones outside their business. So they decided to clean up and centralize the system. To post on the wall, your flyer has to be approved and stamped with the date, and you have to pay a fee. Anne Huang says the wall has become an important place for making connections.
I don't see any community vandalism. Right? You see that once the signs are up, then the community really respects this particular space. This bakery is such a great example of how businesses are multifaceted in acting as a community resource center.
As we walk away from the Chinatown Craigslist wall, we decide to check out the other resources on the inside of the bakery.
This place gets crowded at noon.
I guess we have to get in line.
Well, the line in Chinatown is sometimes very amorphous.
So I'm going to get something. What should I get?
You want to get a cream custard or a lotus seed mooncake?
I'll get the lotus seed mooncake.
Okay. Here you go.
Roy Chan orders the pastries, and as the bakery's name suggests, they're delicious. In Oakland, I'm Lindsay Lee Keel for Cross Currents.
And you're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. We're exploring one neighborhood in the Bay Area, and that's Oakland's Chinatown. So that was a small story that's about businesses and new immigrants, and it's also a little bit about food, right? And that's probably what Chinatowns throughout the world are most well known for.
The greeting in Chinese when you say hello to someone is you don't say hello at all. You say, have you eaten yet?
Can you say it for me?
Sik zhou fan mei. Or in say, hek zhou fan mei.
Yeah, hek fan.
Hek fan. I mean, we have different dialects, but it's all the same. Have you eaten yet?
What do you think that means culturally?
What it means culturally is that, you know, Chinese people may not hug each other a lot, but we feed each other a lot. And food is a symbol of acceptance. Of welcome.
It's a welcoming gesture. It's a feeling of community. Yeah.
And if you go to someone's house and they don't offer you food, they don't want you there.
Yeah.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We're exploring the history of one Oakland neighborhood, and that's Chinatown. This program was produced in association with Mills College in Oakland. I'm joined by journalist and author William Wong and Serena Chen. I'm wondering, San Francisco's Chinatown is known as a real tourist destination, but it doesn't seem like Oakland Chinatown is. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, San Francisco's Chinatown is more established. It's been there a long time. It has a critical mass of Chinese people. And basically, the associations, all of the organizations which formed in the early days to first protect the Chinese and then to harass them maybe or to keep everyone in line, all have their roots in San Francisco Chinatown. So basically, they've become very encrusted within their own establishments. So either you're in it or you're not in it. Oakland Chinatown, you can be brand new, land there one day, and as long as you're open and you join up, I think the acceptance time is a lot shorter in the social service arena, in the arena where people are there with a mission to try to provide services or to try empower the community.
What do you think about that? Is Oakland an easier place to integrate?
I think so. And having been born and grown up in Oakland's Chinatown and watching San Francisco's Chinatown from a somewhat of a historic perspective, San Francisco, as Serena points out, is the mothership of American Chinatowns. There's no other place because the ships coming from China landed in San Francisco. So it became the place. And people did end up in Oakland not too long afterwards. So we're talking the gold rush here. But I think because San Francisco Chinatown has been the mothership and all the organizational and cultural roots are so deep in San Francisco's Chinatown, it means, and the integration of San Francisco Chinese to greater San Francisco was, I think, relatively more difficult than it was in Oakland, because Oakland just, when you look at Oakland's Chinatown, it's flatter, a little bit more open. San Francisco is a little tighter on the hills, that kind of thing. So just geographically, but also the fact that San Francisco's Chinatown was the place to really develop this internal structure in a segregated America, it became so much deeper and much tougher to get out in relative terms. So your Chinese identity in San Francisco is a little bit more intact than it has been in Oakland historically.
That's William Wong, and he's here with Serena Chen. And we're talking about one neighborhood in Oakland, which is Oakland's Chinatown. One of the things that strikes me in Oakland's Chinatown is that it does seem to have a high concentration of seniors, at least in the streets that you see shopping and walking. And we had the story about the Revive Chinatown and really trying to make it safer for seniors, pedestrian seniors. Is it unique to Chinatown that there are so many seniors?
Well, basically, you know, with the redevelopment of tearing down all the homes, all the single-family homes, the families moved out. There are very few places in Oakland, Chinatown, where a family of any size can live comfortably. And basically, you have apartment buildings which cater to seniors.
And actually, a real movement to make sure that low-income seniors could stay.
Right. It's a community where you can walk and not leave for months at a time.
But I wonder, yeah, because, you know, of the suburbanization of the U.S. in general and the trend to move into houses, Bill, you grew up in Chinatown when it was a real residential neighborhood where families lived there. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if that's still true today. Are families able to live in?
Well, I have a slightly different take than Serena, although I agree with much of what she just said. I see this presence of a good number of seniors in Oakland's Chinatown, which also is the same case in San Francisco's Chinatown. You see a lot of seniors walking around during the day on Stockton Street, not on Grant, as a reflection of the kind of the immigration patterns that have occurred since the 65 and 75 events that we've talked about. The children of these seniors probably are in either parts of Oakland or in the suburbs. Their parents, who are much more culturally restricted, linguistically restricted, it's much easier for them to be in Chinatown because it's their comfort zone. They can, as Serena said, walk around the streets, do their shopping. Their whole lives can just be in Chinatown in the language that's familiar to them. We won't go to the point of whether or not they should or should not learn English. That's a whole separate issue. But their children who are maybe bilingual or who are working in sort of multicultural job environments or in white companies will have contact with their parents on the weekend and they will gather. That's why Chinatown on a Sunday is a booming place, right? I mean, it's other days too, but Sundays especially. So I see that as the sort of the intergenerational playing out of what life is like in America. Chinatown for the elders, the suburbs, or a, you know, other neighborhood in Oakland or East Bay for the kids who may be in their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Well, let's go to our next story, which is about the young people who are still living in Chinatown. It takes place at the historic site of Lincoln School, where generations of Chinatown's youth were educated. And let's hear from Jennifer Courtney.
It's a typical Friday afternoon, and the park is full. Some young men are shooting hoops while others talk in clusters. On the busiest days, more than 100 middle and high school age kids flock here. Most of them are Asian American, some immigrants, others born here. Many don't speak English well, and some have even dropped out of high school. If you're not paying attention, you might not notice that one person on the basketball courts is not a teenager. 69-year-old Darlene Lee is picking up trash along the periphery. Now and then, one of the teens will call out to her.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Lee is just as much a fixture at Lincoln as the kids are. She's a longtime community activist who's found her calling mentoring these teens. One of them is Tony. Lee says he doesn't work or go to school. Instead, he comes here every day.
I see that, Tony.
In the half hour I'm on the basketball courts, he calls out to Lee several times for attention.
He'll just keep saying things to me, just to get me to say something to him. And this is how many of my teens are.
You'll notice she says, my teens. Lee is a mother figure to many young people who hang out here, and she says she feels responsible for them.
I try to yell at them and, you know, scold them like I would if they were my children. And a lot of them call me mom or grandma. And like when they write me letters, you know, they'll say, oh, I miss you, grandma, you know, things like that. So I do, sometimes I think I'm the only adult that ever listens to them or that they can communicate with.
Darlene, in our community, is really known as the Chinatown elder who works with youth.
Anne Huang is the former head of the Oakland Asian Cultural Center. She says the teens who hang out at Lincoln Park might not be getting the kind of support Lee provides anywhere else.
A lot of these parents are just working all the time. Even when they're at home, they're exhausted and preoccupied with supporting their families in this foreign country. They also come from a culture where you're not supposed to talk to your kids about feelings.
If I could listen to the kids and try to help them work out their problems, that's what I'm here for.
Darlene Lee has been here all her life. She grew up in Chinatown and went to Lincoln Elementary School, which is right across the street from Lincoln Park. She played here at the rec center as a child.
They would show us how to make pancakes and waffles, the American type of food, since all of us were growing up with Chinese foods. So the park was very important. The directors instilled some new values in us that we didn't get from home.
Lee says she's trying to do that for these young people in her own way. Picking up trash is not in her job description. She does it to remain visible, so the kids know she's there to talk or to break up a fight. Her official title is Recreation Supervisor. Weekday, she answers the phone in the tiny office, checks out badminton equipment, helps with after-school programs, even cleans the bathrooms. But for Lee, the main point is to be there for the teenagers, many of whom have committed crimes.
I try to get into their lives and talk to them and try to convince them, you know, there is a way out, that we don't always have to fight. And I have been guilty of probably being too lenient on the kids. But I just look at it this way. If I call police on them every single time, then the police and their relationship is going to be horrible. The parents are going to have to find ways to, you know, bail them out. And, you know, sometimes if I could just gain their trust and they can understand that someone really cares, maybe they'll think about it and not do something wrong.
But that doesn't always work. Lee says several of these young people have formed gangs and gone to juvenile hall for such offenses as armed robbery, car theft, and home invasion. She says the kids' reputation for being dangerous might explain why many of her peers are afraid of them.
I think everyone thinks I'm crazy to be working here. Most people my age would be rather traveling or hanging out with other old people. But to me, I feel my calling is to be here with the teens. And I have no interest in hanging out with a bunch of old people.
There are some older people who use Lincoln Park in the mornings. They come take Tai Chi and other classes at the gym. But in general, they don't interact much with the teenagers here. And community leader Anne Huang says that's not surprising.
What I observe in Chinatown is an ever-widening gap between the generations.
But Huang is hopeful that can change, and Darlene Lee is part of what gives her that hope. By maintaining a supportive environment for the teens at Lincoln Park, Huang says Lee is helping solve the problem.
I feel that geographically, Oakland Chinatown is one of those rare places where people of all generations can congregate, feel safe to interact with one another, and therefore access a vehicle to bridge the gaps between the generations.
Eventually, Darlene Lee will have to retire, but she says she'll still come back to the park to be with her teens as long as she can. In Oakland, I'm Jennifer Courtney for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. It's a special edition co-produced with Mills College in Oakland, and we're exploring one neighborhood in the city, and that's Chinatown. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm joined by William Wong and Serena Chen. And I'm wondering what you think of that, the idea that there's this generation gap. And obviously, there's always a generation gap that always exists. But I do wonder, as we've been exploring this whole series,
you know, we really saw that youth felt empowered and activated in the 70s, in the 60s, in the 70s. And I wonder, do the young people today feel that same empowerment?
Well, for the folks that Darlene, who was a classmate of mine at Lincoln, so I really admire her work that she's been doing at Lincoln Square for all these years. My sense is that the children that she sees are the children of the working class Chinatown waiters and seamstresses and folks who are doing the hard sort of, quote, blue-collar work.
But so were you, Bill.
That's true.
And so was Alan Yee.
I think the difference is their parents are obviously less familiar with American culture, as my parents were, too. And their English skills aren't as good, so there is a sort of natural cultural gap that their kids, who are much more in an American city environment, that where they will be influenced by pop culture and music and a lot of media that their parents would not get. So there's that natural gap going on. So Darlene is seeing some of the manifestations of the behavior and or development of the kids in an urban today environment versus the time when I was growing up, when the America that I grew up in was relatively more simple. There was sort of less cultural clashes going on at that time. And it may be
less cultural mixing as well, right?
Much less cultural mixing because it was much more segregated. So people in the days I was growing up were much more in their own silos and boxes. Today, there is a lot more mixing, and therefore it may be an unintended consequence of multiculturalism.
Let me bring Serena Chin into this. One of the things that Darlene Lee said in that piece was, most of my friends are afraid of young people. They think I'm crazy to do this work. Do you think that seniors are particularly afraid of young people today?
I think that American society right now, because of the internet, because of all of this exposure, there is a specific and separate youth culture that is evolving in which they speak a different language. You know, everything is very, very different. And the gap between generations in general in this country is extremely wide. And the gap between a rural existence and an urban existence, of course, is extremely wide. And then you multiply that by the fact that some of these kids' parents may have grown up in war-torn Vietnam or in a country that was very disorganized without a lot of societal controls. And they're just coming over here just trying to survive. And here they are trying to raise children with no blueprint, with no role model. And these kids are being exposed to, modern sounds old already, culture, in that there are just so many things going on that their parents seem like they're from another planet, even more so than, you know, ourselves as teen times.
Well, that story was about Lincoln Square Park, which is a historic spot in Oakland's Chinatown. Lincoln School educated generations of young people in Chinatown. We saw it when it is mostly used by young people just now, but it's also a place where seniors do ping pong and dancing and tai chi. And in some ways, Chinatown is really unique in its cultural use of the public square, which is interesting because right now when you talk about sort of urban development, new urbanism, that's the buzzword, right? That's what we're trying to replicate with urban planning now. Let's hear from historian Anna Neruda.
It's funny. I mean, you go to some of these meetings where different large developments are planned and people talk about the characteristics that they need to see there. You know, they need to tear down what's there now so that they can build something that has, you know, characteristics A, B, you know, C. And those characteristics, you know, end up being the descriptions of these neighborhoods that we lost in the earlier redevelopment efforts.
And that brings us full circle back to another park, which is Madison Square Park, the area slated for redevelopment now, which is where we started this series originally. And, you know, once again, the once vibrant Chinese Cantonese neighborhood is slated for redevelopment. Let's hear from Priscilla Wilson, another reporter who's going to tell us the story of some very persistent seniors who decided to take back the public square.
Ed and Evelyn Liu have been married for 42 years. On this chilly gray morning, they're wearing matching yellow raincoats. They've been done with their Tai Chi sets for about an hour. Now, at 9 a.m., they're relaxing and talking with friends. This is the scene in Madison Square Park every morning from about 7 to 10 a.m. Ed and Evelyn know everyone. That's not surprising. They've been practicing Tai Chi for the past 13 years. They were also responsible for making this park what it is today.
You know, what you see here, the blacktop, the asphalt, that's all new. This used to be rolling mounds and grassy mounds.
That's Ed Liu. He and his wife used to practice at the Bart Plaza next door. But in 2006, Bart decided it needed to demolish a building that was on that site.
Bart made a decision that the building was not strong enough to withstand a major earthquake.
Demolishing the building would take 3 years. Evelyn Liu says that meant no more Tai Chi on the plaza.
Someone came up to us and said, in Chinese, there's a Chinese letter that says, we will not have a park anymore.
And they just say, oh, you guys need to go away. And that was kind of unacceptable to us.
So the Liu started a project that will last for the next 2.5 years.
We met a person who said, all you need is a petition. Go out and get 1,000 signatures.
And that's just what they did.
We went to Chinatown and we just knocked on all the doors and asked churches, restaurants, anybody who would help us out.
Turns out a lot of people wanted to help find a new place for the group to practice Tai Chi. Ed and Evelyn began a campaign to highlight the fact that the city was throwing the seniors out.
And we went out and got 1,000 signatures in several days.
The Lus had never done organizing like this before, but Tai Chi had a special place in their heart. Evelyn says it started with a drive to Chinatown for breakfast.
We were looking for dim sum, and we happened to pass Bart Plaza, and these people were going, hee, chee. And we said, what is that? That's qigong.
So they started showing up for the morning ritual, and they liked it. So much so that they kept it up for the next 13 years. And it's not just about exercise.
Hi, Helen. How are you?
Hi, Helen. Emma.
Every day, the Lu see friends here, like Helen. She doesn't speak English, but she does sing it.
Tonight, tonight, oh, rainless, rainy night, oh, rainless,
the song is Tonight from West Side Story. Ed Liu taught it to her about a year ago. That kind of friendship symbolizes what this park is about to Helen.
Well, what she says is that she thinks that for Chinatown, this park is most important to the immigrants. It offers them a chance to come out and talk to people and get assimilated into the American culture more quickly. It's so helpful to have this place.
But the park wouldn't be the gathering space that it is if it weren't for Ed and Evelyn Liu. Their signature campaign was a success. They convinced the city to help them move a block to the west of Bart Plaza into Madison Square Park. At the time, it wasn't much to look at.
It is a park that's been ignored and occupied by a lot of homeless people. And as a consequence, it was pretty filthy at the time.
Because of their campaign, the city agreed to clean up Madison Square Park, add a half-court basketball area, a small playset for children, and flat open space for seniors to do Tai Chi and dancing. The Lus see this as a big accomplishment, but Ed says some people feel there's still more to be done.
There's an old adage that goes something like, all good deeds will not go unpunished. No matter what you do, you know, it's always people will not be quite satisfied. You know.
There are still no permanent bathrooms in the park, and there's no shelter to protect visitors from the summer heat. Maybe because of those problems, or maybe because the park still has a reputation for high crime, fewer people practice Tai Chi in the new location, a few dozen less than before. Although that may not seem like a lot, for a close-knit community such as this one, the change is noticeable. However, on this chilly morning, roughly 200 people have shown up, and at 10 a.m., some are still practicing. There's a group doing sword dancing in the basketball court. On the end of each sword is a different colored tassel, red, blue, and yellow. As the dancers sway their swords from side to side, in and out, up and down, the tassels follow each movement. It's a mesmerizing dance.
They're also into the line dancing, you know. Usually, in any given day, there's about at least two, three, four groups of people doing line dancing at different times.
On this day, one of those groups is doing the electric slide while Michael Jackson's Billie Jean plays on a boombox. Just a few feet away, an 85-year-old Tai Chi master from China is leading a group in slow, fluid movements. They all have smiles on their faces. Evelyn Liu says that joy makes her optimistic about the future.
Our hopes for Madison Park is that it'll keep growing. We use it in the morning, and we'd like to see that it be used more.
One way or another, the area will be changing. These three city blocks, including Madison Square Park, are slated for redevelopment yet again. The city's organizing numerous community meetings and studies to decide how to best utilize the space for the future. These seniors are hoping those plans will include a space for them. In Oakland, I'm Priscilla Yuki Wilson for Cross Currents.
You're listening to KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We've been exploring the history of one Oakland neighborhood in conjunction with Mills College in Oakland, and that's Oakland's Chinatown. And in the series, we've gone from the 1930s all the way up to the present. And I'm joined by William Wong and Serena Chen to help guide us through this audio tour of the neighborhood, and we're looking at contemporary events now. Bill, let me start with you. It strikes me that one of the stories of this neighborhood is one of demolition and renewal.
In the 1950s and 1960s, Chinatown underwent some shrinkage because of public projects like the Nimitz Freeway and the BART, Laney College, Oakland Museum, etc. And it took away some housing that today is there is a demand for housing in Chinatown, but it also, when BART came in, it put its headquarters and the Lake Merritt BART station there, and that also transformed that neighborhood from a residential Chinatown neighborhood to one that had public uses and public space. Today, there is a planning process going on, of which I'm participating to a small degree, about what to do now with the three BART, what we're calling the three BART blocks that includes Madison Square Park. And that planning process is in its early stages, but there is a great deal of sentiment from the broad Chinatown community that it become useful for the Chinese who are there, either for the merchants, residents, seniors, youth. So, and there's a big Chinatown coalition that is weighing in with some recommendations.
I want to ask about that Chinatown coalition, Bill, because one of the things that some of these stories have shown, especially in the Revived Chinatown, was you had said that merchants and the sort of social services, two blocks that oftentimes were at a head, had come together. Is that happening? Are they coming together around this Chinatown Coalition as well?
Well, both interest groups are well represented in the Chinatown Coalition, although in the privacy of the meetings, I've heard that there are some questions raised by one faction against the other, but they're still at the same table, they're still talking, and I believe in the end they'll come together with a plan that will accommodate many of the different interests in Chinatown.
And Serena Chen, you said that you actually lived across the street from where the Tai Chi is happening right now.
Right. I used to live across the street from there. And I think that if you look at what happened organically, where people found a use for it, and then when the use for the BART station was taken away, they converted the park to it, shows the resilience of a community looking for they're part of the community. How can we grow and build this community? And in any time you say, here's three blocks and a blank slate, you're going to have people pulling in different directions for what they see that use.
And let me bring William Wong into this. And Bill, you grew up in Oakland. You're part of this Chinatown coalition, so let's be really clear about that. But there's this, you're also a journalist, so let me ask you this question. There's this sense from the Chinatown community that I'm getting that, listen, this was historically part of our neighborhood. We want it to, again, be part of our neighborhood. That's not the only way to look at this, obviously. There's other neighborhoods. You know, the whole history of this country is one of colonization and removal of people. So history evolves. Neighborhoods evolve. Why does this belong to Chinatown?
Because this has been a Chinatown area community from about the 1920s when the residential Chinatown took place in this area around Madison Square Park. Before that, it was kind of an upscale white community, if you can believe that, but that was the Oakland of those days.
But then couldn't you make the argument that, hey, that's the community to whom we should cater to in this next redevelopment phase?
Well, because there's still a great need in Chinatown because of the population trends, the immigration trends. The community still needs services for seniors, services for young people, open space, and business vitality. All of those demands are still there. And here's an opportunity to relook at those three blocks which were seized from Chinatown. So there's all good moral reasons, spiritual reasons to bring it back. So we're hoping it happens.
And there's economic reasons. Chinatown, throughout the past four decades, has been one of the most vibrant commercial areas in the city of Oakland. And it sustained itself in spite of everything that's happening. And so why not expand on that? Why not take our new smart growth thinking? For we're looking at smart growth, where we're looking at clustering services where people work, play, and live in more or less the same area and have access to public transit. And you have a perfect place to really take what we've learned from our past mistakes and rebuild a community. And it's not going to be an insulated Chinese community because it hasn't been for the past 30 years. So it's going to be a diverse, multi-ethnic community where everyone feels safe.
Bill Wong?
Yeah, just to put a slightly bigger frame on this thing, given the fact that the museum, Laney College, are there, and they have their own needs for building audience and for increasing the vibrancy of that area, why not marry that idea with what Chinatown interests are? I see it as a perfect potential win-win for that area of Oakland, and it can become a real draw for other parts of Oakland, given the new museum and a Laney College that wants to build up its student body, and a Chinatown that is serving not just the Asian community, but a lot of other people these days. So it's a potential win-win if all the different selfish interest groups can work together, and I believe there's hope for that.
You've been listening to a special edition of KALW News, produced with Mills College in Oakland. We've been exploring the history of Oakland's Chinatown. You can hear all of the stories in our series at kalwnews.org, and we invite you to add your memories from Oakland's Chinatown as well. We also want to know, what do you think Oakland should do with the three-block area around Madison Square Park? You can call us at 415-264-7106 and leave us a message. That number again is 415-264-7106. 864-7106. This series was edited by Zoe Corneli and produced by Chris Hoff. We also had help from Melanie Young, Thea Croman, Erica Moo, and Martina Castro. I also want to give a special thanks to William Wong and Serena Chen, who helped accompany us on this audio tour. Also thanks to Roy Chan and Anne Huang. Our Mills College reporters are Lupe Caceres, Jennifer Courtney, Lindsay Lee Keel, Tashina Maniak, Annabelle Peterson, Morgan Ross, Melody Sage, Priscilla Wilson, and Sina Woodson. Our managing editor is Ben Trefney. Also thanks to Sarah Geis and StoryCorps for their help with this series. You can find out more about sharing your stories through StoryCorps and the Asian Cultural Center's memory map by going to klwnews.org. Thanks so much for joining us on this audio tour of Oakland's Chinatown. For Mills College and KALW Public Radio, I'm Holly Kernan.